Moses has come down from the mountain. After seeing the burning bush and receiving his new mission to be the point person in the deliverance of the Hebrew children from their 400 years in slavery in Egypt, Moses has followed God's instructions, come down the mountain, and though he protested, "But God, I have a speech impediment. Pick somebody else." God equips us to do what God has called us to do. Amen?
Amen.
So Moses has a very short speech, which he delivers at least 10 times to Pharaoh, ruler of Egypt, sometimes with his brother Aaron, sometimes on his own. And the speech is this. Standing before Pharaoh, ruler of Egypt, Moses' speech is, "Let my people go." Amen. Four-word speech. Moses is very clear. Pharaoh is unmoved time after time after time. How many times do you remember? 10. 10 times. Pharaoh wasn't listening. Pharaoh wasn't budging. Pharaoh wasn't letting anyone go. In response to those 10 visits, 7 plagues. After 3 chances, then Moses returns again. "Let my people go." Pharaoh says, "Mm-mm." What happens? All the water in the land of Egypt turns to blood. Gross, right? It's like 7 disaster movies in a row. Pharaoh doesn't budge. What's next? Frogs. Big frogs, like the celebrated jumping frog of Calaveras County. Frogs. Big frogs. Big frogs everywhere. Pharaoh doesn't budge. Then, lice. Good times. Lice on every body and every critter of the Egyptians, but not the Hebrew children. Pharaoh doesn't budge. Then, flies. More deliciousness. Flies everywhere on everyone and every critter of the Egyptians, not the Hebrew children. Pharaoh doesn't budge. Next, some sort of disease that kills off the vast majority of the livestock of the Egyptians, not the Hebrew children. Still doesn't budge. Next, boils on the skin. Gross boils on the Egyptians, not the Hebrew children. Still, even Pharaoh himself, but still, no. Next, hail, like volleyball-sized hail. Beats down all the crops in the fields. No movement on Pharaoh's part. Next, locusts, who come and eat all the grain that's already been battered down by the volleyball-sized hail. All gone. Still nothing. Then, deep darkness. Have you ever been down in a cave? Maybe a commercially developed one, and you go down in there and there's a moment when they turn off all the lights and it's so dark you can't even see dark. It's so dark. Do you know what I mean? It's like the worst, most devastating eclipse you can imagine, and it stayed over the land for hours. Still, Pharaoh doesn't relent. So then the last of these 7 plagues. The decimation of the firstborn of all Egyptian children and all the Egyptians' livestock. And to prevent this from falling upon the Hebrew children, we come to where our first reading begins today. God's particular instructions for how to keep the feast of Passover. The protection is blood, the blood of a lamb, either goat or sheep, which should be on the doorposts and the lintel of the door of each Hebrew home, so that the slaying spirit would pass over that house. And we hear the other instructions. Get ready to exit this land where your forebears have been enslaved for 400 years. Take a lamb, roast it in this way, prepare it this particular way, put on your traveling clothes and eat it wearing those, and eat this meal in a hurry, because you are about to flee as fast as you can ahead of Pharaoh's army. This meal is the feast of Passover. It marks when God, who revealed God's self to Moses as I am who I am, passed over the homes of the Hebrews because of the blood upon the doorposts and lintels. It marks when God demonstrated in no uncertain terms that the Hebrew people, the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, were God's chosen people, and that the covenant made between God and first Abraham and then renewed with Isaac and with Jacob, still valid, still in effect. This ritual meal, the Feast of Passover, is to be carried out in a prescribed way. And the prescribed way includes sharing. Did you hear it? In the midst of all those instructions, embedded in the directions is this. If there's a household that's too small to have its own lamb for the feast, call those folks in to share it with you. The deliverance of the Hebrew children, who will become the people of Israel, includes making sure not only that no one is left behind in Egypt, but also that no one is left out of the feast. No one is left out of the feast. Deliverance and hospitality. Freedom and sharing. When we read this story and these instructions alongside today's gospel, we see that even in a household of only two or three persons, the I am is present. Even in a gathering of only two or three persons, the I am is present among them, among us. And equally as present now, with however many of us there are here and however many are watching via live stream, as on Christmas Eve or Easter morning when this place is packed out. It just takes two. God is present among us. It's the message of Matthew's gospel, start to finish. God is with us. So it matters when we are together, how we treat one another, not only in this congregation, but how we treat our neighbors in this community all around us. It matters how we relate to guests who come in, who may be only with us for one service. It matters how we relate to all our neighbors, how we welcome them, how we respond when we hear they are in need. For as our patron St. Paul says in the reading today from his letter to the church in Rome, the one who loves another has fulfilled the law. Love does no wrong to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfilling of the law. All the commandments, the entirety of the law, are summed up in these two. Love God, love neighbor. This past week, more of our neighbors in need in this community than usual came to the St. Paul's campus for assistance. They needed help paying utilities bills, help paying their rent, help to get their boats towed, help to get back home. Last Sunday, after I assisted one of these neighbors in paying his electric bill and rent, it was brought to my attention that there's no more money in the rector's special assistance fund, even though people gave to it last Sunday. There's no more money in that fund, and there are all these people, more than usual, coming to ask for assistance of various kinds. Not everybody wanted money, but most of them did. And not gobs and gobs of money, just $300 for this electricity bill, just $200 to get my boat towed off the reef, and so on. Reasonable, legitimate requests. Not being able to assist them financially at that time doesn't mean that we weren't able to offer them something valuable. It affirms the dignity of human beings to have their stories listened to genuinely, attentively. It makes a difference to people who are struggling to have someone offer to pray with them and for them, if they are praying kind of people. So that's what I did. I sat with them, I talked with them, I prayed with them. They still received something, but not financial assistance. In the middle of that week, I went to the monthly luncheon of the Key West Business Guild. The speaker was Leah, who's the president of United Way of Collier and the Keys. She was presenting some of the most recent information we have on the costs of living in our community. Not the national averages, not the Florida averages, but Lower Keys and Key West averages. Did you know a person making minimum wage in our community would have to work 92 hours per week to pay for the basic necessities of life? 92 hours a week at minimum wage. There are neighbors in our community who work 2 and 3 full-time jobs, or nearly full-time. And yet, they're still falling short. What's going on? Food in Monroe County costs more than anywhere else in Florida. Transportation continues to increase in cost. Childcare continues to increase in cost or disappear because of some tragic decisions. Housing is a crisis in our community. People work hard and still can't pay for everything. I was introduced by Leah at Business Guild to a new to me acronym, ALICE, like the woman's name, Alice. It stands for Asset Limited Income Constrained Employed. Employed people working hard and still not able to make it. Living paycheck to paycheck, one crisis away from potentially devastating consequences. I shared these difficulties and some of this data in my blog post on Thursday and in the edition of the epistle that went out on Thursday. I have been saying since before I got here that St. Paul's people are generous, compassionate, kind, and caring. And you showed it once again. Overnight, after the epistle went out and my blog went up, $3,500 came in overnight. Thank you. That'll make a difference this week and in the weeks to come. People responded immediately, and more money, I'm sure, is continuing to come in. Because it's God's money, right? Entrusted to us. We can't solve everybody's problems. We can't solve every need or meet every need of even one other human being because we're not God. And it's not our job to meet every single need of every single person, but it is our job to be good stewards, as you have shown yet again that you are, to share what we have with those who don't have nearly enough. What's the message? Everyone comes to the feast. No one is left out of the feast. No one is left out of this feast. Everyone is welcome to this place and to this table to which Jesus has invited everyone. Once again, you've acted with compassion and kindness. Please continue to do so and know that it makes a real difference in the lives of real people. You have acted with compassion and kindness. You have loved your neighbors. You have fulfilled the law. The I Am is here among us and with us. God be praised.